Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV Podcast 498. Jared Miller alongside Johnny V.
Yeah.
He's here, folks.
I'm here.
He's here one more day as a 45-year-old.
Yeesh, you're right.
A few more hours, just a few more hours. You'll turn that ripe old age of 46.
On previous podcasts, we for sure would have made it into the birthday day.
Tonight, we're not going
to. But probably not tonight, because you got stuff to do tomorrow. You got places to fly to. You're flying to Austin.
Yes.
Tomorrow to do some commentating for the USWDGC.
Like, that's how we treat Kristen. We let her win. Let her win the Grand Slam, the sweep of the majors last year, and then you have to shorten her reign as U.S. Women's Champ.
Moving,
how disrespectful!
Yeah, I mean,
she just won it in like September, and
right.
Here we are trying to immediately get
Terry,
some other contenders in there.
We
to
call
take
this
away the title.
The U.S. Women's.
This isn't
the Estonian Women's Disc Golf Championship. We got to get her out. We got to get somebody else in.
Yeah. Well, at this rate, clearly this year is already proven. We've seen some incredible competition, and that segues right into our champion from this weekend in Owen Scoggins. What an incredible performance. And to see so many of the disc golf community members rally around the story that's Owen. And we've seen her and we've known her and we've loved and appreciated and valued her in so many ways. And then we've seen her
come out
on top a couple of times at some of these events. You know, you think back to D-Glow and some of these other incredible performances that she puts up. But then to come out and have a truly record-breaking experience and performance that she put up this last weekend, I just you put on your bingo card things like Owen having a good time, you know, some plays maybe on her name. There's all sorts of things that you put up for the year. But when you say Owen averaging 10-27 golf over three rounds to take down not just the field, but a very solid field at that, with all of the heavy hitters in it. Because when she won D-Glow, Kristen
there was
wasn't
no Kristen,
there, whatever. But with all the heavy hitters in it, and then to still take it down in the fashion that she did, truly remarkable and incredible. And hats off to her.
Hats on to her now.
Exactly. Just absolutely awesome to see. And man,
she averaged 10-25?
10-27, I
10-27?
Think. Maybe it was 10-25. I just said 10-27, so we're going to believe that.
Regardless, not quite the highest average. No, I'm sorry. It is the highest average of all time. She didn't quite hit the highest single round of all time. She was short of that by like five points. What a phenomenal showing. I got to watch some of it, thankfully, this weekend and she just carved up those woods. Like, you were watching so many other women hit and ricochet and then miss putts and just be a little off on their drives. Own just dominated that course. There was almost never a question. Like, there was a brief moment in round three where Kristen started out with 3 for 3 and Own got the one of three. And you're thinking, oh, this could be it. Own could maybe slide back a little bit. Kristen has, you know, a 10-20 rated round. Own comes in with like a, you know, a 990 or something. And Kristen could do that Kristen thing she does. No, Own rattled off 4 in a row after that and kind of put the nail in the coffin at that point. There was not enough holes for Kristen Tatar to come back. And it was just so much fun watching Own putt. She was hitting everything. There was, we're going to see if we can get to pull up the stats here for Own Scoggins. Own Scoggins, 87% fairway hits, 24% parked, 78% C2 in regulation, 39% C2 putting, 39% Terry Miller.
Damn.
And those are just the categories she led in. Not to mention, she shot 74% C1, which I think put her, honestly, around 10th or 12th. Mm. But, I mean, it's, regardless, what a weekend for Own Scoggins. Her average putting distance, 16.2 feet. This is one of those instances where we talked about it last week, where what does that really say? Total putt distance, average putt. Does it really matter? I think this is one of those ones where this helps tell that story. And to have Own do what she did was amazing. Just flat out amazing. And to see the outpouring of support after she tapped in, so many of the women came up and congratulated her, which is really funny because this is her second Pro Tour win. But as you said, there's always been that little kind of monkey on your back, like, well, Kristen wasn't there. I mean, it's awesome she won, blah, blah, blah. No doubter.
Yeah.
Not a single doubt.
Yeah. Congratulations to Kristen. I think maybe one of the coolest parts about it is the, so to speak, redemption in which she felt like she had from this being one of her poorest performances in the 2023 season to come back. And I understand the course is different and there's, you know, different components and all that stuff, but just in general to come back to a course and to a or to a tournament that you perform poorly at. And I'm sure that was somewhere in the back of her mind. And she said it multiple times, like she didn't have expectations coming into this event. And to see her perform the way that she did, just truly incredible. I don't know if we can say it enough times. Not often will many for a number of years probably be able to say, hey, we bested the field. We bested, you know, she bested Kristen by 11 and then she bested Missy, who was in third, by 16. That's just not something you're often going to hear for the foreseeable future in a lot of tournaments, especially a 3-round tournament. You may think a 4 or 5 round, somebody has the, you know, this incredible week and they're truly unstoppable over 4 or 5 rounds at like a Worlds or something, and they kind of run away with it and because it was their week. Well, this was her weekend. She said that much, but she squeezed every bit out of it that she could to come away with that margin of victory is incredible.
I think she's just hoping Austin's her city, because that's going to make this upcoming week a lot of fun for her.
Yeah. And we'll get into some details for this upcoming U.S. Women's, which is going to be kicking off now just in a few days. Very quick turnaround. You immediately have to think about some of the women in their turnarounds that a few women even took off. I think of Jessica Weiss, who said that she was okay with just taking off the weekend. A couple weeks ago, we saw Maria Oliva say, hey, I'm going to withdraw from Waco and I want to start focusing on the U.S. women's. So some of these women were taking that into consideration, and the guys, so to speak, will have the weekend off and won't be playing in a high level, you know, elite series event. Some will entirely take off. Some will find a few other things to do or spectate or whatever, but the women are now going on their third consecutive weekend, and it'll be two out of three that they're playing 4-day events, mm-hmm. this being a major. So nothing for nothing. It's early in the season. Hopefully you don't have any of these, you know, longstanding potential injuries or anything in the background. But this has been this is going to be a lot of golf. Oh, and mind you, not necessarily ideal playing conditions over these last few weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
So these are all things that I think you put in your back pocket as we're going to be solely focused on the women this weekend.
Yeah, we talked about it last week. The prelude was saying, all right, this weekend could get ugly as far as weather goes. It could get nasty. And it was rainy and windy, and there were some delays. We were fortunate enough on day two to be just barely get the MPO in after, I think, like a 2.5 or 2 hour delay. And then on day three, the men barely finished up. Literally, there was worries that the playoff was going to be a problem if Nicklaus didn't hit that putt and it tied there. There was like, it was dark.
Yeah, because three holes were trimmed out already.
Correct. For the MPO
of the MPO final round. And I'm not good with I didn't do the geography. How much of that, if you click on it, how much of that is that purely just geography of the course that it made sense to trim those specific holes out? I would have to think so.
I believe so, because they trimmed out 12, 15, and 16.
Okay.
And so 12, 375, 15 is 345, and 16 is 375. So they gave everybody pars on the scorecard, ultimately.
Yeah, which I think poses a whole other question for another day.
And I think just in general, those holes, there were some people out there, and I don't recall the holes particularly. That's one of the things in this course I wish I'd gotten to see it in nicer weather, because I was a little bit distracted, and just with everything happening, I feel like you don't get a good feel of the course. Those particular holes, I heard people saying, well, I think they're three of the worst holes on the course. Wow. Like the least liked, we'll say. I don't say worst as in worst played, but they were the ones that people just didn't really care for. Mm. So I think it's fortunate that those were the ones that got taken out. Plus, you take those out because I think there were already some MPO on the course when they made the decision. So no one had gotten to hole 12 yet. I think they had just started teeing off. They were somewhere early in the course. So getting rid of those three helped really cut down the time.
Yeah.
And as you said, it probably just made sense logistically from, you know, where to go from where. Because when I watched the MPO finish on that final day, you didn't notice anyway, like, oh, we got this long walk now. It just, sure. It was very smooth.
I'd be curious if maybe the board knows, somebody that's probably more familiar with the actual course and the facility. Just chime in on the board and let us know, like, there's nothing we're going to do about it now. But did that make the most sense? Again, was that a geographic thing? Clearly it wasn't the whole difficulty. I mean, all sub 400 feet holes, all par threes. So it wasn't a matter of like, hey, let's trim out a par five and a tough par four, because that's for sure going to save us amount of time. I'm just assuming, again, geographically, that's how it ultimately made the most sense. Maybe when you got done with one hole, when you shift over. Not, I'm not familiar enough with the course that I have any idea, but that would just be my guess. So nonetheless, they got them all in. All right.
And the course was much more liked this year than it was last year. I think everyone was kind of happy as to how it felt, it played, and some of the changes that were made. But we will talk about the women here a little bit. Let's go to a little bit further down the scoreboard. As we said, Owen Scoggins owning this course. Second place, Kristin Tatar, by, as you said, 11 strokes. Third place, Missy Gannon. What's amazing to me, looking at the round for round three, Owen shot a 10 down. Kristin shot an 8 down, and then Missy with a 2, Natalie Ryan with a 3, Hannah with an even. Like, there was nobody else near them.
No.
And they just kind of walked through that course relatively smoothly. As we said, fourth place, Natalie Ryan, tied with Hannah Blomroos and Kat Murch. Kat Murch had an off and on day or weekend. We'll say that final day, she was, I think, on the lead card, ended up shooting a 6 over par. Ends up at only 8 under. She was right there with Tatar up until that final round when just nothing went right for her. Katrina Allen making a great showing in 7th place. There were a lot of people writing Kat off. for multiple reasons. One, she didn't look like she had her her throw down yet. Obviously, she is pregnant, so you never know how that's going to change or make your body react and whatnot. So Kat coming out with a stellar first round, decent second. I think it was a decent second, decent third. Maybe it was the second round that was a little rough for her. I don't quite recall. No, she shot a one down. So she went like 4-1-2. So ultimately, Kat kind of making the top 10.
Yeah, which is vast improvement from where we saw her both at chess.com and then missing the cut at the Waco event. So to see her do that says a lot. And she made a post about, still finding her swing and how she's not done. And what I think is most interesting about the post she made, maybe it was even last, just a few days ago, just talking about like, hey guys, I'm not like going anywhere anytime soon. Here's what she posted yesterday. The season is not slowing down and it felt pretty good to play some solid golf. Not much time to reflect or rest. Women's USDGC starts Thursday. Would love to build on last week's play for the first major of the year. I feel like she even had a post before that.
It might've been on Instagram. I don't know. I mean, unless that's the same one as she puts on Instagram.
Well, here's where she said 6 days ago, right after Waco, saying a couple weeks into the tour, feeling closer each week during practice of getting the game where it should be, da, 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 so on and so forth. Don't worry. I'm going to for sure play through DDO, the Dynamic Disc Open. So to me, just for her to put that out there, because I love it, because all of us idiot talking heads among all of the social media and the media channels have plenty of speculation and wondering, when is she going to play? What is she going to do? What's her plan? What's her timeline look like? I just love that she put it right out there for everybody and says, I'm going to play for sure. Obviously anything can change, but she says, I'm going to for sure play through the Dynamic Disc Open, which is what, the first week of May.
Yeah. So another month and a half.
Okay. So,
and cause she's due in July.
I believe that's
I
saw.
I thought that was the case.
And then just as a quick side note to all of that, she's clearly, I assume, going to be setting for what we know as a lot of far along pregnant people records for playing disc golf. I don't know how many are out there right now, but you got to assume she's going to be setting most of them.
We need Stat Mando out there.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, well, let's start with a seventh place finish at an elite, an elite event this far along. There's something to be said about that right off the bat. So I hope everything continues to go well for her. And it's going to be awesome to see her continue down this journey. And I'm just excited to see it. I don't know, because we haven't seen this.
We need Stat Mando to do months pregnant versus, you know, yeah, placement with some sort of we'd have to look back at like a Paige Hsu, who I think kind of just took that time off.
And that's what I'm saying is that and a lot of this is very personal and we'll probably never know some of these details, but you got to wonder, how far along was some of our top finishing and who those players might have been, because
let's speculate, Terry. there's nothing better than two men speculating on a pregnant woman.
I'm not about to do that.
All right. After Katrina Allen, we've got Evelina Salonen in eighth place, and then a tie for ninth between Valerie Mondahano, Heidi Laine, and Allie Smith. Allie Smith is a name we haven't talked too much about this year, so it's good to see her kind of start to come up on the leaderboard, and Heidi as well. So a lot of these women probably getting a good warm-up in before USWDGC. Should we move over to the MPO?
Sure.
All right. MPO. Nicholas Antala wins this by a single stroke over Kyle Klein in a dramatic finish, Terry. Dramatic. If I know, you know, grain of salt here, because you're talking to two guys here who really pioneered the live industry. But if you weren't watching this one live, you missed. You flat out swing and a miss, because the way the production crew handled having so many guys in this was amazing. And I know I was sitting on the couch watching and just thinking like, oh, my God, they hate this. Control room is just Mo is just pulling his hair out. He hates it, because there was at one point, I think we had like 7, 8, 9 guys that were in contention to win. It came down to the very, very end, Kyle Klein was on the third card. And so Kyle comes in with a 12 under, was the leader up until the final hole. Kelvin Heimberg had a chance to catch him, but ended up bogeying the final hole. Had he birdied it, he'd have been right there with Nicklaus. Had he parred it, he would have tied with Kyle. And then there was a chance for a three-way playoff. But
that would have been great.
Oh, God. No one wanted that. But anyway, coming down to hole 18, Nicklaus needed the birdie. And this is a wooded tunnel shot. He had bogeyed it the day before, and I think birdied it day one. I need to look now for sure. Bogeyed it round two and birdied it day three. I'm sorry, day one. So he walks up and he just puts down the perfect drive in the dark. Right in the middle. If you can't see the trees, you can't hit them.
That's right. That's,
you know, it's typical glow golf. And then throws the most beautiful Anheuser. And I think it caught up on a little bit of stuff because he was circle's edge. He was just outside the circle. And you could see how nervous he was. It bled through on the television. Just the cameras were on him. You could see he's kind of nervous, anxiously waiting for his putt, kind of playing with his putter or whatever. He steps up. He lets it go. And it's three quarters of the way there and he's celebrating. He knows, which no one wants to see a spit ever, but but you just always have that gut feeling like, please don't come out, because he knew he hit it. He knew it was the sweet spot where he wanted to get it. Drains it and then celebrates, as one should. He just took down. He is the first Finnish MPO player to win an Elite Series, because we have had Evelina.
Yeah.
And I know there was a lot of places out there was just, you know, that were celebrating first Finnish winner of the. It's the first MPO Finnish player. We're not going to short shrift Evelina, who has had some really solid and great events. So Nicklaus ends up winning this event, gets to put on the cowboy hat. He didn't look that bad in the cowboy hat for being a Finnish player. He just looked like a young man in a cowboy hat. I'm not going to lie there. And you got to see Kyle Klein while Nicklaus was coming down the 18th hole, practice putting in the dark, and even watching Kyle throw these. He was practice putting to an elevated basket and just throwing them over the top. It looked like he was just pumped and eager to go. Like he almost couldn't control his putt because he was so excited. As we said, third place was Kelvin Heimberg, who just hole 18 couldn't get it done, but has a good showing after taking the week off at Waco and having a poor showing at chess.com. There were start to get some rumblings of, is Kelvin still not, I don't say still good, but is he still healthy? Can he compete right now? I think this put a lot of that in the closet.
Isn't it how fickle we are?
Fickle, yes.
Just immediately like want to start writing a guy off after a poor weekend or two.
Yeah. And welcome to sports, man. Fourth place, the guy who's probably had maybe the best year so far, Anthony Barella, coming in with a 9 under par, not getting any of the last five holes. You know, I take it back, because two of those were not. So he didn't get any of the last three holes. Two of those obviously pars were from, because they took them off, but needed to get those three last ones in order to keep up with Nicklaus. Tied with Gannon Byrne, sixth place, Cole Radalin. So we got to see Cole finally start to show up this year, who he's just really not been much of a talking point. The other guys ahead of him have all been in the game this week, as well as Andrew Marweed. Andrew Marweed, again, had a pretty solid weekend. Eighth place, Corey Ellis, who at one point Corey was in contention, and that's, I think, just couldn't keep up. Just literally, I watched, he missed so many putts. I believe it was day two that he just missed. He was airballing C2s, which was not like him.
No.
Like, I watched at least two just airballs from close C2. Not like, he's not airballing like 50 60, or 60 60s. Footers.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just not able to kind of get it under control. And finally, your top 10 finishes out with Chris Dickerson and Matty O. Both those guys, good to talk about them, as again, we haven't, those are two that we really haven't mentioned their names too much this year. Matty O had a decent chess.com finish, I believe, but I don't remember him. I think he took last cash at Waco.
Yeah,
we talked about that.
I was just going to say, and what really jumps off the page at me when you look at the final scores, if you weren't following along throughout the weekend or anything like that, you see that down to Chris Dickerson and Matty O, essentially tying for ninth. Ninth place was just, what, five off the lead as a total. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at, they were 21, or excuse me, six off the lead. Antelo was at 27, six off the lead. And it was very competitive, going 27, 26, 25, 24, 24, 23. Like, it just, always, like you said, going to make it for so much more of an exciting finish. Yep.
And the best part was, as we kind of all were talking about in some chat boards, it didn't feel like watching live, it didn't feel like you missed anything. The control room was on the ball. They were getting every player, every shot that mattered. The minute a player was kind of out of it, they just faded away. And you didn't have to worry about them anymore. So, again, hats on to the control room crew. But ultimately, hats on to Nicholas Antala and Owen Scoggins this week. And they get the Open It Austin Cowboy Hat Trophy. Phenomenal. Just a phenomenal showing.
Yeah, congrats. Congrats to them both. This being, you know, as you just mentioned, with the Finnish victory or Antala being Finnish and getting that MPO win here on the tour is certainly yet another.
We've said it's been
insight.
Coming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's another insight of what's to come. It's a precursor, foreshadowing, whatever you want to say. We're going to see that door now, you know, as he maybe opened it. I think we're going to see it get kicked open and continue to see floodgates of players that are going to it's just going to become more and more, you know, common.
It is. And you could see how much it meant to all of those guys.
Yeah,
because he ran back, jumped on his caddy, and then you see you see all of his touring buddies come up and just give him the biggest hugs. Yeah. And he was celebrating. And then he gets to the awards, and you can see how emotional it was for him. He was literally crying.
Yeah.
You know, just that's something, you know, you don't see, you're probably not going to catch Anthony Barella doing that for an elite series anymore.
Not maybe anymore. He got emotional as he should. He got his first win.
But that's what I'm saying. Like after that first win, you're probably not going to see Calvin do that for an elite series win. Once you have that under your belt, it's a little different. But for him, he has come so close so many times. Like he had it a few weeks ago and let it go. He was there for USDGC and Burr just pushed him out. Mm-hmm. Like he's just been on that cusp for so long. To see him finally get it, you could just tell the relief. And Gannon Burr came up and just gave him the biggest hug. Kyle Klein came up, gave him the biggest hug. And granted, I don't think it matters that they're all Team Discmania, but you could tell there was some celebrating for those guys. I think Team Discmania is looking really good right now. After there was some, as there always is in off season. Oh no, they lost Eagle after they lost Simon. What are they going to do? And then Gannon Burr shows up. Nicholas Antala resigns. You've got, you know,
Klein
already there. You've got these three young guns who are just shooting phenomenal golf. Yep. So it's great to see. It really is. The MPO is exciting. And there were a lot of people talking about FPO, how maybe it's losing a little bit of interest because Kristen just dominates. You know, what fun is it to watch a player just crush the whole field? But Owen Scoggins says, no, not so much. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get my share in at the ripe young age of 40, whatever.
Yeah.
Early 40s. Younger than me.
Yes. Yes. And about to be even more younger.
Shut your mouth. Yeah. So this overall was a great, great event.
Yes. Very cool. As I just said, I think in the back of your head, you have to think about, you know, the Texas swing, the experiences that these players are having. They've now been in Waco. They've been in Austin. Now they're going to be in Austin for the FPO and for just general women's golf at the major. And we're going to have all the different women divisions playing at the U.S. women's this year. And then to see them head to Houston for Texas State's the weekend after. We're going to see what not only does the weather hold out for us for this weekend and or have in store for us. And then also just how big Texas is and Texas disc golf as we're at basically the halfway point of the quote unquote Texas swing. So congrats to the host team, who I'll openly admit Johnny and I don't have as nearly as much history with in terms of, you know, so often we know kind of the people behind the scenes or the people doing all the work. Austin is not a place that you and I have had a lot of actual intimate experiences with.
Speak for yourself. Oh,
well, there was that one night in Austin.
Just, we were in Iowa. No,
congrats to them. And yeah, it's awesome to see. And you saw a lot of positivity coming from the event. You hate to twist it into anything that's not positive, but it has become, I don't want to call it a theme, but it definitely reoccurs from time to time when people have gotten expressed some frustration or disappointment with what people will largely put under the umbrella of tour standards or standardization. And we saw a couple players talk about the tee pads that they may or may not have loved. Baskets always get talked about. I think they'll forever get talked about until we're playing on one basket. But even then, when we do have, if we ever get to a point where it's solely one basket at every single tournament on the Pro Tour, naturally the complaint will still be about that one basket, because that basket's not going to be perfect if it ever does become standard as a singular manufacturer. It still won't be perfect per some people's feedback. But that would be the one thing that I think we saw as some of the social media posts. And I don't know if we're ever going to get rid of that, to be frank.
No.
Because I feel like no matter what scenario you have, it may not suit someone. And that's where standardization, you can ask for these standards. And I think we should strive to get to standards. But at some point, like I was just saying about the basket, even when you do get to standards and they are standard at every single event, there's always going to be one of those standards that frustrates or infuriates or comes up short for either a player or a small subset of players. Like, as we all know,
you can't please everybody.
Yeah, you can't please everybody. But as we all know, a tee pad length is always going to be in the back of James Conrad's head only because of his unique style and run up. And if a tee pad, when Johnny and I started back in my day, no. Like tee pads, like 4x8
yep.
was kind of a standard.
Yep.
Like that was a basic tee pad. We've obviously grown. We're throwing farther, and there's no reason why things can't upgrade or improve. 4x8, 5x10.
I'm a big fan of 5x10 because 4x8, just a hair short for my long legs.
5x10 became a thing. 6 or 7-ish by 12 has even obviously better. Become a thing. I get all of that. What is the final number that it should be at? I think becomes
6x30
becomes a question as to what they should be at. And is it still going to be too short for James's liking? And I'm not picking on James in a negative way. I'm just saying he's one of the most famous for his style of run up.
I think James, if in his wild fantasies, 15 feet for James. Because he likes to have that long run up. I think after that, I think that's plenty for him. That's way more than most people need. Some people just like a little bit longer run up, but
yeah. So those all become another interesting point. Somebody said something about why do baskets become standard? And it was funny because when I then just lurk around some of these discussions, somebody very emphatically said that I forgot what they said the wish should be, but they said the distance should be 15 feet in terms of the tee pad, and then that the Pro Tour should be hauling around these 6x15 foot tee pads, 18 of them.
Concrete tee pads?
He didn't specify concrete, but I'm thinking a 6x, like you're hauling around a 6, like those are 18 platforms? And it's not 18, because you would need FPO ones. It could be as many as 36 on a given course. So I don't see that becoming necessarily a solution, but I thought, man, hauling around a 15-foot tee pad, not saying they couldn't be permanently installed, but a 15-foot tee pad that you're hauling around seems crazy. But then I was seeing all these other analogies to why are things not standardized? And well, the basketball hoop at a basketball game is standard.
10 feet.
Yeah. Standard height, standard size, blah, blah, blah.
3-point line is.
All these other things are standards, and I get all of that. You know what's not standard? MLB stadiums.
No,
they're not even standard from one freaking side to the other, which I personally think is a little bit crazy. But the fact that you have a home run distance at a certain distance, and that could be different. And I don't mean just uniform around the actual diamond. I mean, left field could be 404 and right field could be 412. Like, there's plenty of things that aren't 100% standardized. I'm not suggesting that we can't reach for goal. We can't have goals that reach for some uniformity, but just realize, like, no matter what, it's never going to be 100% the exact same event to event, city to city, course to course. They're talking about some other things were thrown out as examples of other random examples of other sports. They have standard things. And then I thought, wait a minute, what about tennis courts? Is there two or three or like four normal
grass, clay, and
pavement? No, I'm just kidding. Concrete. It's concrete. But isn't there like two or three or four different like standard, semi-standard? And because somebody was equating it to bowling, I'm like, yeah, the pins,
hard pack,
is and the lane. One? But then there's the different oil patterns
and whatnot. Yeah, and everyone can use a different size ball if you want to use a 15 versus a 16 versus a 12. I mean, I like to use an egg-shaped ball, personally.
Yeah, those work out
really like, it's my score shows it.
No, not the egg shape on the scorecard.
No, that's different. Sheet. That's different.
That egg shape, that zero.
Yeah.
So anyway, I am not dismissing some uniformity and some ways in which we can be more standard, but just realize we're never going to get all the way there. And even if we did, somebody's going to be still pissed off about it.
Of course.
Or disappointed. All right. Other tournaments. Well, you got some world rankings up.
Yeah.
They switch what, weekly?
Who knows? These, I think about every 2 weeks, because I think the last set was February 28th. And since then we've had a leap year, and now this is from March 13th. So this is actually
2029 right now.
Yeah. This is from pre Open in Austin, but after our last podcast. Oh. So top five in your MPO is Calvin Heimberg, Eagle McMahon, Richard Wysocki, Gannon Burr, Isaac Robinson. I think we're going to see, if I had to make some predictions, we're going to see Isaac Robinson drop out of the top five, as he has not had a good season so far. Paul McBeth, Simon Lazat will both drop. Kyle Klein will probably jump from eighth, I would assume, up into the top five. His season so far has been going really well, but I think that maybe Eagle might drop. I don't think he'll drop too far. But
you don't know how any of this math works.
No, I'm just projecting.
Okay.
Predicting. No, I don't know anything, Terry. But I think Eagle will
Klein drop. Could be in seventh, or he could be in first. We don't really know.
No, we're but so.
Antela is now going to be in super first.
Super first. So yeah. Those are your top five for MPO. Your top five for FPO. Kristen Tatar, Evelina Solomon, Owen Scoggins, Henna Blumroos, and Holland Hanley. I don't think we're going to see a lot of movement there. Maybe Owen jump up over Evelina, but a lot of that's going to depend on what happens this week, because if they update it every 2 weeks, we're going to see two events come in.
Majors got to be weighted like triple, quadruple, according to somebody's
if Evelina wins this major for whatever reason, she's still not going to pass Kristen Tatar. I know that, because you can look at the average points. Kristen Tatar has 165 points. Evelina in second place is 76. And then own 75. Like, it's just Kristen Tatar has so much banked up that she just can't be passed up. It will take months of her not playing to pass her up. It's just she has gained that much. So for the FPO, it's pretty set for your number one. But I think your number two and three could easily, if Owen has a good week this week, she's going to pass Evelina up. Those points are just too close. But I think those three are going to be your top three for now.
And I don't mean to sound completely dismissive of the world rankings. I think
these are the only rankings I care about. These are the only good ones. Terry, there is not another world ranking that matters. Our PDGA is our Professional Disc Golf Association. I don't care who other makes rankings. They're worthless. They're great. I've got a new Skip Ace ranking. I've got a new Smashbox ranking. I've got a new Terry Miller beard ranking. None of them matter. This is the only one that matters.
That's why I say, like, good luck to all of those that have shifted in your favor, in their favor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck. Just as a quick tangent to that, and this is going to be super quick. Yet again, we large swaths of people seemingly, supposedly do not care or are anti-ratings, yet almost like storyline 1.5 or 2.25 of the weekend, maybe Owen, you want to mix it up with Owen and or Antela winning, right? As storylines like one and two, and then like 2.25 on the storyline list is Owen's rating for her three individual rounds and her overall rating for the tournament. And I just want to point that out. You guys can timestamp it or throw it out the window or do whatever you want, because I'm just pointing it out. Mm-hmm. For everyone that doesn't care about ratings and how ratings are trash and horrible and they hate them and they're useless and blah, 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 blah. And I'm not saying they're perfect. I'm not going that route either. I'm just saying that was like arguably the very next storyline of the entire weekend.
Yeah.
So put that in your back pocket and tell us next time how ratings don't matter or mean anything. And then we'll revert back to this timestamp. Okay. Moving on.
Okay.
Also published, not only did I see a caddy guide was published for the U.S. women's, so you could go check that out. I know that.
And I'm going to say finally, because it was
2 weeks ago we said, it's okay, we don't need it yet. But now it's been released and you're saying finally. Where's the happy middle for you?
I think it and personally, it needed to be before this weekend. It had to be by like Thursday or Friday. You had to have something out, because you have players that are probably coming in a week early or taking the weekend off to play. So I do feel like the PDGA has dropped the ball a little bit on this caddy book, having it only released today. Now, there are pros and cons to releasing early. You and I have been to how many players meetings where they have spent a significant amount of time on corrections to an early caddy book.
Yeah.
So, hey, guess what, guys? I know we posted hole 18 is 356 feet, but now it's 342, and there's now an OB casual relief over to the left. And like, because things change. And they changed one of the holes. I believe it's hole 18. They just finished updating it, so I believe it's not an island hole now. That might be at Sparkling.
Sprinkle Valley.
At Sprinkle Valley, yeah. Thank you.
Sparkling Whispering Woods.
Sparkling Whispering Woods drink. So while I do feel like I would have rather had the caddy book out a little bit earlier, even if it was going to be wrong, that's what players' meetings are for. And so I would rather have it. Now, the funny thing is, they got it out and they still got that one hole wrong. And I know they're updating it, so that's great. And we're in a different position now where, you know, we're not printing these books off. You should take these books as a digital book. Now, you can print it off. You could bring it to your local Kinko's. I don't expect the PDGA to hand out caddy books anymore, because you can either keep it on your phone as a PDF, or you can go to Kinko's and print it. If you want to write on it and make notes about where you're going to throw and from what positions and where things are, I'm 100% good with that. Although, like I said, I do feel like it would have been nice to have these books out a little bit earlier for players that took the weekend off that maybe wanted to go practice. This is a huge event. 400 plus people.
348, actually, but yeah.
Oh, 340. Well,
I only say that because I just happened to see
it. Oh, was it? I thought
it was. Otherwise, I wouldn't have corrected you. I would have just believed
400. Oh, no. Okay, yeah,
but nonetheless.
Yeah, so 340 some odd people. That's a lot of people, and a lot of people are coming in early, and they want to look at their courses, and they want to check it out. So I just feel like the weekend before I don't think is asking too much to have it out. That is the big complaint so far that I've heard of the USWDGC, is just that the caddy book was not put out in what a lot of people felt like was an appropriate time. So I hope the rest of the event runs without a hitch. Everybody go to your players' meetings, because if there's changes, That's where they're going to make those last minute announcements. Sometimes they have addendums that you can pick up pieces of paper that'll tell you. Sometimes they're posted. Always check the USWDGC website for updates. I remember we used to have to check it regularly for schedules, and you'd see, what schedule? Oh, you've got schedule 2.31. There's a new one. There's 2.42 now that Chuck Kennedy put out.
I'm looking at version 3.2. Currently on the website.
Okay.
Version 3.2. And I believe they did have an updated draft schedule or an updated schedule, you know, a week or two ago that hopefully was as close to this current one as it gets. But yes, it is all listed. I also just put a link in the comments for anyone that does want to click on it. And there's tons of other great stuff out here. Yeah. I have not. I'm excited to look at the Live Oak. Or, the caddy book myself.
How much research have you done, Terry Miller? You got a little bit in?
So here's the plan tomorrow. Again, because our quick side note is most of our history, Johnny and I specifically, and we didn't go to Texas a lot when it came to competitive play of any kind, with the exception of the Houston Worlds in 2000.
One of the hottest worlds of all time.
2002, Houston Worlds. Outside of that, I've been to Texas, obviously, for quite a few of our Pro Tour events since the Pro Tour came into existence in, like, you know, 15 or 16. Prior to that, you nor I really were involved in many of the NTs or the Waco and the Hot Series and all the amazing things Texas has been doing. It's just not a place that we traveled to frequently. So I feel like I'm a little behind on the times. But to answer your question, when I get there tomorrow, which means an early flight, which is my least favorite part. But when I do get there, one of the first things I'm going to do is go onto the course and walk the course. I'm hoping or thinking that Val and Zoe, our schedules are going to align in the sense that the three of us will be able to go out there. I don't know if anyone else will join, but the three of us at some point will probably be able to get an actual walkthrough on the course. Just because it's a course that I'm not intimately familiar with. So that'll be good to see. It does bode well. I talked earlier about how crazy the scheduling is and how we're here so much for this Texas swing. The fact that they're playing just one course, the FPO is playing just one course. That's huge. Because otherwise, and it's huge in the sense in terms of preparation. Some may say, hey, I wish there were other courses. I wish there was more diversity.
I wish there was.
I wish there was a different challenge besides any one course, even if that one course is amazing.
Two courses.
I wish was at least a second course. I could get on board with that. Right now, all of the women are thankful. It's just the one course probably due to, the prep and the rest and everything else.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is just the one course that's going to be played. So my plan is to get out there tomorrow and do an actual walk around on the course. Hopefully talk to some of the FPO competitors who are out there hanging out. And, maybe I'll get really fancy and bring a Bushnell or something and make some of my own notes. We'll see how that goes. We'll see what those holes lay out in front of me for. But yeah, I'll be out there with a notebook and taking some of my own notes in. So maybe I'll see some of you guys out there. I'm excited to see. I think I touched on it last week, and just excited to see what our MPO, largely our MPO competitors, do for the weekend. Are we going to see a lot of them on bags? Are we going to see them just hanging out in galleries or hunkered down at a hole? Are they on to Houston and already, taking in the course and relaxing in Houston? And they'll watch some of this on PDJ Live and on the network. Like, I'm curious to see what the MPO turnout will look like. And
And Austin to Houston, I think, is about 2 hours.
Sounds about right. Two and a half. Somebody will correct us. There's some that are obvious.
I looked this weekend. There are no events. Like, I thought maybe there'd be like a local B tier nearby that maybe they could drive to, like somewhere in the Houston or Austin area. I knew there wasn't an A tier just based on being so close to USWDGC. But I was thinking, would it shock me to see, a Alden Harris or Ezra Robinson or Chris Dickerson get in a B tier in Texas?
No,
not at all. But there isn't. So we're going to see some players. And I was checking the tournament registration for Texas as well. And most players are going to be there.
For Texas States, you're saying? I'm sorry, for what?
Yeah, for Texas. Most of the players are going to be there. There's a few exceptions. I don't believe I saw Paul Macbeth on the registration list. Chris Dickerson is not going to be there, but your regulars are going to be there in Houston. So
yeah. So nonetheless, I guess I think of a Chandler Fry who will just assume we're going to see him on the bag for an Ella Hansen, and maybe or maybe not, we'll see a double G on the bag for a Jessica, and we'll see maybe a Kyle Klein on the bag for a Cynthia Ricciotti. You know, there's some that are kind of to some degree assumed in some capacity. And then I'll be curious to see if there's anyone else that, you know, takes advantage, or James Proctor might be out there.
I would love to see our MPO players be spotters.
Ooh, that would be cool.
Not for the women FPO.
Yeah, but for like
the junior
intermediates or the
intermediate. Sure. Like get out there and make fans.
Yeah.
Like just, hey, guess what? Or, you know what? I'm just going to grab a name. Matty O. Walk over to an advanced player and just say, hey, do you want to caddy for a round? I'd love to caddy for you. Just be there. If you're going to be in Austin anyway, make a new friend.
Yeah.
And I just think that something like that could go a real long way. Whether it's a Joey Buckets or an Adam Hamas, I'm just looking at names. You know, Gannon Burr. How cool would that be if Gannon just went up to some junior and is like, hey, can I carry your bag?
Well, they might be older than him.
I don't think so anymore, but close.
Yes. We'll see. I'm excited. I'm also excited. I'll wholeheartedly admit the idea of our commentary team being able to be on site so that we can take in the experience of after the round when people are getting together, and it doesn't just have to be at the local watering hole at Austin Beer Works or otherwise. It could be anywhere, but just having those in-person conversations with some of the competitors and sharing either it's recapping on the day or even stuff off the course that isn't course related. Having those interactions is one of the things I miss most about not being on the ground, on the sidelines for events this year. So this will kind of give us that hybrid opportunity of being in the booth for calling the shots, but then before and after the round, having some actual FaceTime and interaction with some of these competitors and being able to talk to them and truly know what they're saying or thinking or what's going on. Or that's when I'm out on the practice green shortly before we go live, and I see that someone maybe is favoring their left leg or is put an extra bandage on their finger. Like, those are the things that hopefully we can pick up and then relay and convey during a broadcast. And I think that's what can make our broadcast better just overall. So that's something I am genuinely excited for. I hear Austin's not the worst city in the world. We've been there before.
We have been there before,
but no, looking forward to being out there. So, all right. USW DGC this weekend, 4 days. Don't believe that there's a cut. We were further researching that. I don't believe that there is. I think we're going to see four rounds that take place, all four out at that Sprinkle Valley course. Somebody on the board just said that it's too short. I can't speak to any of the details. Like I said, I'm excited to get there in person and to hear what everyone else says about the course. You know, I can have all my own thoughts, you know, all day long, but it really matters what Owen thinks and what Jen Allen thinks and
we'll
what
find out
Missy Gannon thinks
at the press conference, probably.
Exactly. So
just a DGBT note and DGN note. If you want to keep your PDGA member discount, make sure to link your account. Mm. That's got to be done by March 25th.
Really?
Yep. Otherwise, you will probably lose your PDGA member discount. So make sure to go into your settings of your app and link your PDGA account.
Okay.
Just a note that's out there right now. Some other news. We want to talk a little bit more about USW DGC. Making her season debut, Kona Montgomery.
Yeah.
After putting it off and putting it off, trying to recover as much as possible after battling thyroid cancer. She's going to come back and play USW DGC. Zero expectations. That's kind of where I'm sitting. That's where hopefully where she's sitting at this point, coming off of more or less a year plus of not playing competitive golf and finally being able to have this type of weight off your shoulders. Hopefully it's, you know, she said she was out there throwing for a little bit and her arm got sore. I think this was last week, which is why she didn't play the Open at Austin, which she had kind of hoped to do, but she just said it wasn't in her shoulder, her arm, something was sore afterwards. But she is going to play U.S. Women's, and you know, we obviously want to wish her nothing but the best of luck. So that's good to see that one of our young stars is returning to the field and the course.
Yeah, it looks like just an hour ago she had posted on Instagram, what's in my bag for USW DGC? So you guys can go check
Terry,
that out.
Tell me
see what's
it, one
in
by
bag.
One. Just let me know.
Do her bag discs, being a Zuka cart.
Do her discs feel good in the hand? Do they
hold probably hold any line that she puts any them line. On? Yes, of course, though. Best of luck to her. And we'll see upon that return. And I think there's obviously still some other players that we're still seeing where they're at and what's going on and how things. We talked about kind of a little turnaround here this last weekend for Katrina. Paige, you know, similarly coming back from injury, has not put up overly impressive weekends.
No,
by
she's
any
been
means.
Bad.
And she's been very honest about yep. that within her own social media posts. And I guess we'll see how that shakes out come this weekend. So we'll see if it gets all put back together for her. All right. Anything else that jumped out at you for other events? Obviously, this felt like it consumed most of the world because that's where all our top players were. But anything else that was of note from the weekend?
There was one other event this weekend. It was an A-tier. Out in California, Orangevale, California, to be exact. It was the 2024 St. Paddy's Classic presented by Innova. Winning in MPO was Aviel Gomez. Tied for second place, Landon Mortensen and Mike Sale. And a tie for fourth place between Jeff Fais and Trent Somerville. That was your top five in MPO. There was no FPO field. So we'll quickly talk about MP40. Winning is Chris Shotwell, who shot well.
Yo.
Four strokes better than Steven Rico and Joshua Sappenfield. So fourth place, Ray Johnson, and a fifth place tie, Jay Jones and Chris Basuino. So congratulations to those players.
Yeah, and we're seeing on the board that if it's AVL, Gomez, 15 years old.
Seriously, wow.
I mean, came into the event with a 982 rating.
Shot a 1039, a 1050, and then slacked a little bit of a 994.
Yeah, almost gave it away, if you look, right? Yeah. Gave up six strokes to second in that final round.
Landon made a run at it with a 1042.
And Mike Sale was a little bit closer at the time. But, yeah. So congratulations. That's news to me. Congrats. Certainly
another young gun who will probably see it on the tour in about 2 to 3 years.
Yeah,
that's gross, Terry. It's just wrong.
I don't know. Doing some work. Quick side note. Yeah, it's a little bit more on a somber side, but thoughts and love and everything else. Who was a staple on the tour in Chris Sprague. Him and his family had suffered the loss of his son last week.
13-year-old boy.
Yeah, and sounds 14, like 14. May have, they I think said stroke.
Stroke while in the shower.
I think the funeral or visitation was yesterday, but Chris, very well known, and just share so much love to the overall disc golf community. Also one of the, you know, head guys over when you see Camden and Camden 2 and a lot of those places that we've seen in the last few years over in Iowa. Everyone in Iowa and the Midwest already knows Chris and then some, and has for many years, but certainly heartbreaking to see and to read last week. So we love you, Chris, and
if you
best of luck to you and your whole family.
Yeah, if you dig around, I think there is a GoFundMe for not for the family, but they're going to be donating it to a charity of some sort in his name, in his son's name, for some of the things that he was probably interested in. So
yeah,
a very rough week for Chris.
Certainly. All right. I'm going to find Johnny. I need a link that I can send to what will be our guest. We're going to have a special guest here tonight.
Well,
and while Johnny double checks that and gives that to me, I want to quickly also say the Maricopa Open, 11th annual Maricopa Open, which I understandably a few of you forgot about because while that was happening, I was traveling myself over to Malaysia, Singapore and Malaysia. I was filming that same weekend over there. Meanwhile, Spicy Boy was in Maricopa. They had to set up a temporary course. We've seen Copper Sky and we've seen the Meadows courses get used in the last 10 or 11 years for that event, last 10 years, some combination of one or both of those largely. And this year, due to some, I'll just call them politics and challenges with the community in using those properties, Sam Russ had gone out along with some others and created a temporary course. And ultimately, that's what was played. We saw the likes of Andrew Marweed, Nick Newton, Anthony Barella, Tristan Tanner, all just to name a few off the top of my head as I was thinking back. Cupcake and a handful of others all were featured throughout the rounds of coverage. All three rounds of those are out and available. And I know I tried to space them out so that they went out as you guys were prepping for Austin and trying to give you some fresh footage. But if somehow you're just hearing of this for the first time, those are all out. And I did something that we talk about from time to time, Johnny. I took all 18 holes and I put them into a one video clip as opposed to separating them out. And crazy enough, now granted, there's a lot of birdies. Crazy enough, all three of those rounds with all 18 holes, there weren't drone previews, but all 18 holes all came in at 50 minutes or less for the 18 holes. It was like 50, 44, and 46.
Wow.
For you to watch all 18. So again, tons of birdies on the course and relatively quick edits, but that brought you to an entire round of golf at 44 minutes. And it was pretty well received. In fact, if I had an unofficial poll, I would say it was 10-1 of people that said, I would continue to watch something like this. And I enjoy this format versus one person maybe that said, hey, I really, really love the 2-9. So it's something to keep in mind. There's a lot of factors that go into it. The style of editing, the course, the commentary, financial concerns. There's a ton of things that go into those decisions that get made. That's for another day, maybe on another podcast I do. But just so you know, I saw that, heard that. It's certainly worth considering maybe to dabble in that a little bit more, is giving you a full 18 at once, as opposed to breaking up into 2-9s.
Heartquake on the board says that was neat. And I definitely left after 9 holes and went searching for the back 9 before I realized.
You can see that you got to like 23 minutes and then there was still like 21 minutes left in the video. I can understand some confusion because I went to the scores after 9 holes. And then, but then I came right back to hole 10. And
I'm I can understand if some people think like a lot of times there'll be an ad at the end of a thing or something along those lines, sure, that you would just kind of go from there. And you're like, oh, I'm just going to get out of here. But
nonetheless, good to get a little more feedback. I appreciate that. All right. Let me see if I can confirm. I've got something that I'm about, to send. Good friend of the show, good friend of ours. He's not so much a friend of the show, because he rarely tunes in and listens to us. Yeah, to Yahoos. Good friend Mike Schwieger tuned in. He had some late night running around to do, or the next morning he had some stuff going on early. And he said, you know, after not listening to you guys for a few months or a few years, good to see you're still effing up on bringing a guest in. I said, he's like, you're only 497 in. I said, yep. So that was pretty funny from last week. And so I thought I'd pass that along for you. All right. I'm sending off, a link so we can hopefully get a guest. Uh, And we're going to see if that works with password. Here's the password, everybody. The password is...
It's like a new game show. It's back again.
That's password. Yeah, I think I saw something like that.
Saw previews on that.
Pretty, like to get in on some of that.
Do you, though?
No, I think it would be fun.
Okay.
Do I have a chance to be a game show host?
We have been game show hosts.
Outside of disc golf, no. Do I have that chance?
No.
Damn it. I think I would enjoy it.
Oh, I think we'd have a lot of fun.
Maybe I just need to make one up. No, that's not disc golf, though.
I know.
Yeah, we'll see. I passed on some information for our guests. We'll see if that can happen here in the next few seconds, so don't go anywhere. I'm reading from Tim, who has provided us some artwork. Tim, I'll send you another message back. I had to share, was sharing with Johnny V just before the show, our Smashbox Patreon disc, so thank you. Question is, can you hear the guest or can they hear you? That will be a good question. Hopefully tonight everything goes nice and smoothly, and we're going to find out here in just a moment. I wonder if our guest can hear us.
Looks
like he can. He's smiling.
Like,
well, he should be smiling because we talk about him literally almost every single week, and rightfully so, because just as we saw Owen in the FPO division, even though she's age protected, she decides to take care of business, setting records at an age protected age. This guy has some extra special records, Mr. 400. Ryan Schweberger.
What's up?
Hey, buddy.
How are you?
I'm outstanding.
All right. Start at win number one. What? congratulations. This weekend, as we kind of have, you know, had this wandering eye on the Schwebby win tracker. He beat us to 400 before we got to 500 in shows.
That was my goal.
That was your goal. Well, you succeeded. Unfortunately, all you get is a lousy spot on our show to talk about it, but as a reward.
I bet you there's more to it. I bet you he gets more.
Win 400 out of 800 and how many events?
850-something, I think.
859, according to PDGA. So yeah. Just shy of 50%.
That like 46.5%.
That ain't bad.
That ain't too shabby.
That ain't bad at all.
Congratulations, first and foremost.
Thank you.
Like a birthday, I'll ask. Like Johnny V's about to have tomorrow. Does it feel any different?
A little. I'm not gonna lie. That morning, I had some nerves. First time I had nerves in quite a while.
Because you didn't want it to possibly be prolonged, or because why?
The fact that it could be at one of my favorite courses on the planet was really cool. And I mean, if you saw the award ceremony, the backdrop of the course was right there. Nice sunset. I mean, that place is magical, man. It's well worth trying to get there if you ever have the opportunity.
So tell us about it for those that haven't or aren't familiar. What are you explaining? What are you so excited about?
Hawk Hollow Disc Golf Course. It's John Bisco design. It's on his family's property. It's been around since the early 2000s. It was used in the U.S. Women's Nationals event. That's actually back in when it was like 2018, maybe something like that. Around there somewhere.
Michigan. Yep.
It was Tatar's first major win.
A lot of history at that course now.
And then number 400. So, do you go to that area just for the course, just for the event, you know, or are you parlaying that into any other golf or playing or anything else, or was it you were going out of your way to go play there?
No, the Virginia Team Invitational was this past weekend, and I was on one of the teams. I was on the Colonial team from the Newport News, Virginia area. It was second time I'd played VTI in the last 2 years, but I hadn't played it in like 6 years prior to that. just didn't feel like going up for it. And just want to take some time away from it and focus on more regular disc golf instead of match play.
So let's put a pin in that just for a moment. We'll come back to the match play in the VTI, because I know that's like probably an entirely separate podcast that could happen from everything I've heard. Everyone else, I have to assume, was aware of what could happen or was happening, or was it somewhat low key for you in terms of this milestone?
This weekend, everybody there knew. they do. Yeah, it was no secret whatsoever.
And clearly, no matter what you do, there's always going to be a second guesser or a naysayer, and that's not where I'm going with this. But if somebody says to you, hey, that was a one round sanctioned flex start, does that matter to you at all? And how many of your wins fit under that description?
Less than 15 flex starts. And it wasn't a flex. It wasn't a flex start. It was regular setup tee times. It was, he tried to keep divisionally as much as possible.
Okay.
But I mean, it was 120 players. I mean, it was definitely didn't feel flex startish at all. Because you didn't get to pick your tee time, you asked for tried to get a certain part of the day based on if you couldn't get there until later in the day, but yeah, you didn't get to choose your tee times.
And then that brings up the perfect follow up to that, which is, I think we're seeing people go away from that, go away from the truly flex show up whenever, you know, kind of maybe that, yeah. I'll dare I say loosey goosey kind of nature. Of that, is that something that you either are for or against? I mean, and how do you compare that old format or that format to what happened for you this weekend?
I haven't really been a fan of the flex starts at all. Okay. I mean, it was a vehicle to get more tournaments in the past. I mean, I've probably less than 20 ever.
Sure.
Most of the tournaments I play are at minimum two rounds in a day. I mean, I think the true test is to be tested more than one round in a day for if you want an actual event to count towards actual records. And I think all these ones that are being amounted in the past few years is absolutely insane. I think the PGA was definitely putting a hamper on that. I think they are changing that up.
Yeah, which I can understand. Obviously there were a ton of benefits to the true flex format in terms of just that, the flexibility, but there were also a lot of significant competitive, we'll say, drawbacks or challenges that could present themselves as well. Not only the time of day, which could happen on any given event, but you're seeing what somebody's maybe in the clubhouse with, and then you can, you know, how that may or may not affect you. And then, like you said, choosing some of your own groups and when you show up, all of those things kind of could muddy the competitive waters, I think is a fair way to put it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You speak to something that I think a lot that's lost, truly lost on a ton of newer players, which is two rounds in a day or dare I say a four round C tier or a four round B tier. Like those were very standard in the days when you and me and Johnny started, especially in North Carolina, standard. And now, you know, we're discussing the polar opposite. We're talking about a flex start that you decide that morning you want to go play 18 holes or not. Break down like what some of those early events and maybe even existing events for you, what those consist of. Like, what does that mean to go play an event that sometimes is four rounds?
Yeah, I mean, I've already played one B tier this year that was four rounds. And that was luckily it was 20 minutes from my house. But yeah, it was a Chuckster event. It was four rounds, two rounds on Saturday, two rounds on Sunday. And I think that really shows the true test of consistency. Even in your basic two round one day event, you can have a hot round and then just skate by on the second round and still win. Whereas a three or a four round event, you have to show some quality consistency in your play if you want to take home a win. Back in the day when I came off tour, you go to a C tier in North Carolina, it's going to be minimum three rounds, usually four rounds, and you're playing against 4 or 5 other thousand rated golfers trying to scrape together a win. And you're not playing consistent golf, you're not going to get them, because there's other quality golfers that are trying to get that C tier win just as bad as you are.
Yeah, for that $244 after four rounds over the 2 days. And again, these are just our roots. These are where we've come from. You know, some people saying on the board, is that two rounds in a day times two? Yeah. And at one point, I feel like, at least in Wisconsin, in the Midwest, it often became two rounds on Saturday, a round on Sunday morning, and then maybe some kind of showcase or final nine or skins match on a Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't until many years later when the national tour, and then some way after the national tour had started, finally we started seeing the Friday, Saturday, Sunday starts. But even then, look at your Beaver States, you know, Beaver State events throughout the years, you'd have maybe two on Friday, one on Saturday, and one on Sunday. And like, so you're just always, we're playing a ton of golf, and it's, mm-hmm. it's wild to see what we've evolved to with these much longer courses and frankly, a lot more players. But
Shoot, think how Worlds used to be.
Yeah.
You were playing during Worlds, you were playing two rounds a day for 4 days, semifinals, and then a final nine.
Yep. Yeah,
I mean,
some of us didn't get to the final nine, but yeah. Johnny and I were sleeping for those, but no, you're right.
No, like, we walked around for every one of those.
That's true. Exactly. And then it was wild when World said, hey, let's go to 2-1-2-1. And you'd maybe play two the first day, one the second day, two the third, and then one.
I remember people arguing like, oh, you know, I get, and this is back in the day when it was like, I'm taking vacation for this. I want to play more golf.
Yeah.
Like that was the thing. It's like people didn't do that. Very few people did this for a living. And so we were like, well, I only get to play like five rounds and I'm cut.
Yeah.
Give me my full six
and
or
it's
seven
only four
rounds.
Courses. Damn it. I want to play every course in the area.
Yeah. There's two more courses in this area I can play.
We've come a long way, Schwab.
Yeah, I mean, AM Worlds in 98, I was playing a round before the first round, a round in between the first and second round, and both the tournament rounds.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just what we did.
Even that AM Worlds in 98, and many Worlds since then still, especially on the amateur side, I mean, that was four different courses, and I think we played eight rounds, and then semifinals and a final nine. Like, that's how Worlds. Now, granted, these are 5,000 and 6,000 and 7,000-foot courses. They're not the 10,000, 11,000, and 12,000-footers we can see today, clearly, but that was, you know... That was just standard. Those were our days back then.
I think Ohauser was a little longer than that. Ohauser was a little longer.
It might have been
a little bit.
Yeah, but and then you had to sit around and wait for somebody to shuffle a scorecard. There was no, you weren't going out there. So as someone who's been playing this long and has been this successful, clearly you have feelings about various rules that have shifted and molded. And I know this is kind of off the cuff and random, but where are you on the side of the scoring right now? Yeah. Because that's something you're worried about every weekend. You may not be doing the having to show up 5 minutes ahead necessarily at every event, but in terms of scoring and everybody taking care of their own score or getting a scorecard, where do you stand on that? Or could it be improved or not?
I love the live scoring.
Okay.
Ever since it's been available, I have kept score every single round.
Okay.
Wonder why he gets all those wins.
control of it.
Exactly.
No, what do you say? He's from Illinois.
I think everybody should be accountable for their own score.
Okay. And I guess you said it perfectly. I was just going to say, to follow that up, do you care about digital versus, you know, the old school scorecard? Does it matter to you? Just everybody should be accountable for their own score in some capacity.
Absolutely. I mean, if you want to, if keeping score during your round is affecting you that badly, maybe it's not your cup of tea of playing disc golf.
Fair.
Yeah.
Like, it is kind of the most important part of the game, right?
Try knitting or crochet.
Well, I mean, we've seen people like Katrina Allen. She'll sit and do crossword puzzles. She'll sit like other people. People do things in order to keep their mind off of the competition, to keep their mind occupied as opposed to sitting and focusing on the golf or the scores. And I don't have a problem with that. But yeah, bring along some crochet and go with that.
It's not like when you're keeping the score, it's showing the whole scoreboard when you're doing it. It's only showing that hole. You don't have to look at your phone or anything else on your phone while you're doing it. Just put the score down and put your phone down if you're so worried about it.
Yeah, or if you're worried, another way to look at that, if you're worried, keep track on a paper scorecard and then simply don't let your mind do the math. Like, it's not that hard. You write down a number.
That's what Barry's doing now. He's just putting it on a paper scorecard. He's not using his phone.
Sure. Yeah. I guess I go along kind of with that old school mentality, and it's not that it's necessarily old school, but the score is literally the most important part of the game. And to think that some should skirt of that responsibility, I think is a little bit silly. I understand you may be distracted, but at the end of the day, like, keeping score is literally the most important part of the game. So it's fair that everybody gets it. Okay. Exactly. Any other rules, random rules that you do want to address that I'm not thinking of?
No, I love the fact that we can clear out behind our line now.
Okay. Okay.
As far as you want.
Yeah. And we can take relief now from OB. That was just kind of fun. As far back as you want.
Yeah. In all of the years, has there been something that has really stuck as, man, I'm glad we changed this, or this is completely different from 1999 to today, that you think is just vastly different, that's been significantly improved? Is there anything that jumps out at you as just an obvious massive change?
I mean, it was so long ago, but I love the fact that I don't have to mark my lie if I don't want to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
That was like, what, 2002, 2003-ish?
Yeah, where you could just leave your disc instead of having to mark it with a mini.
Yeah, I rarely mark my lie. I mean, if I go out of bounds, or if I'm hemmed up on something where I need a little bit of relief, but it's the only, I'm probably less than one time per round do I ever mark my lie.
Yeah. What's your reasoning? Somebody might wonder.
I'm getting older, dude. One last time I got to bend over and pick something up.
Yeah, better on the hips, back, and knees, man. Not having to.
it's a smart life choice.
Yep. Okay, that makes perfect sense. Some people want that extra 9 or 10 inches, depending on where they are. And like you said, obviously it could be situational in terms of like if it's going to create a better stance for you. But I think is it fair to say the better you are, the less likely you are to mark the lie?
If you haven't noticed in the past couple of years, Macbeth doesn't mark his lie as hardly ever anymore.
Comes to mind.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. Did you ever care much? I'm just thinking of old school rules. Did you ever care much about when they changed it, whenever that was, from 2 to 3 minutes to locate a disc?
Man, I don't remember that.
Okay.
I don't remember the change.
I thought it was always 3.
No.
It used to be 2 minutes.
It definitely used to be 2. I couldn't tell you. You could give me $100 to name the year. I have no idea. It's more than
Maybe it was before 98.
No. Because it was when we were. Well, I guess I did play about 3 or 4 years before that even. But no, I think it was. Now I'm going to Google it on the
internet. No, we don't really care. How good? All right.
So look, you said that in one of your podcasts a couple weeks ago, yeah. And I remember. I just don't remember that.
Okay.
So how good is your memory?
Oh,
mine's pretty good.
Pretty good. All right. Good. Because I've pulled up a handful of your events.
Uh-oh.
Oh, Lord, here we go.
And what I want you to tell me, and these are all wins. These are all wins for you. Okay. I want you to tell me who you beat. Who's in second place, if you can remember?
God. Damn.
It's going to be tough. I think that, they're not random ones. They're relatively significant ones. Let's start with the Zebulon, Cha-Ching, and Zing, 1999. Your first win. Do you remember who you beat? Who was in second place? Or even, I'll take not even second place. Tell me one of the guys in the field that you beat.
Well, that's going to be easy.
I know it is, but.
Carlton Howard.
You did beat Carlton Howard. He was in seventh place. And any guess who would have been in second place?
I know for a fact Larry Leonard was not there.
Nope.
So did it feel less valid at the time because Larry was so...
A little bit. Okay. I want to think Walt Haney was probably there.
He was in fifth place.
Yep. Snoop was, yep.
In second place. McCree was in fourth. There was a tie for second place between Greg Mayday.
Greg Williams? Oh, Greg Mayday. Oh, yeah. Well, that's sort of a left turn.
And Kirk Yu.
He's a Raleigh guy.
Who we all know, Kirk Yu. All right.
Yo.
Kirk Yo. Yeah, you're right. 2003. Gentlemen's Club Challenge 4. That's how old we are.
Ron Russell.
You beat Ron Russell. 100% right. Congratulations.
He had me by five strokes. Yeah, I think he had me by five strokes starting that final round.
Yeah, and you got him by six in the final round to take him down by one.
That's right. That's in 2003.
And that was prior to being... a national tour, yep. The AGPT obviously didn't exist.
I think that broke like Barry's streak because Barry had won it like two or three years in a row.
Third place was Stevie Rico. Fourth place was Barry Schultz. All right, we're going to move a little bit more to 2007, the 10th annual Newport News Fall Color.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You
2007.
Yep. This was a little bit more of a random one that I grabbed, but.
Walter Haney.
Nope.
No Snoop in the field.
Chris Lee.
Nope. Double J.
Justin Jernigan?
Justin Jernigan, you beat him. You took home $550. Justin Jernigan.
Yeah, well, yeah, that tournament always paid out well.
It did. $550 is a good one. All right. We only got two more here. One more MP. This is an MPO one.
This is an easy one.
2015, King of the Hill.
That was the second year I was there. Chandler Fry.
Correct. Is that your... No, I was going to say, that's not your last MPO win, I don't believe. No, you've had a few since then.
No, I won it 3 years in a row.
Yep. And we'll move on to one more. 2013, Tim Selinski, U.S. Masters Champion.
Yeti.
You beat Jay Yeti Redding.
And right behind him,
Patrick Brown and...
And Climo.
Kenny Climo. Johnny McCray, Jonathan Baldwin.
Johnny McCray was there.
That's a murderer's row right there, honestly. Yeah,
it was. Those are the best of the best of our era, without a doubt, like it's right there.
Yep. You took home $2,000 for that.
Yeah.
Do you have in your head a most significant win? Like when you look back on all 400 wins, do you think like this one for whatever reason means more than any other, or you're more proud of it? Or
I was just doing Brian Mace and Paul Bailey's podcast right before this, and I got one. It was last year. Winning Ledgestone in MP40, and I was already 50 years old. That was huge, because I think I won by 4 strokes, and that field was stacked of guys that are all way younger than me. And I think Yeti was top 4 or 5. He might have been second, but no, MJ was second. But yeah, that field was stacked, and I was very, very proud to win that event. Yeah, at 50 years old.
Awesome. Are we going to see anything special from Innova for the 400? Are we going to see like maybe a release of any sort, like a special limited edition disc?
If they don't do anything for me, I'm getting 400 discs made. I'm definitely whether they help or not, there's going to be at least 400 discs made.
All right. Well, you know, to save 2 of them for us. Yeah. So
I want in.
Terry got a few of them last time at USDGC.
I'm sure he did.
Slow play brewing.
Yep. And even looking at your year this year already, it shows us that you've played.
Why is
played
there a number 2 in there? I don't understand.
Yeah, I know. You've played in 11 events, 10 of them in MP40. You've won 9 out of the 10. And then this weekend in MP50, you took that down. So you're 10 of 11 for overall events this year. And granted, that's playing up in a division. Because you've been eligible for MP50, and only one of those was in MP50. The other ones all coming in MP40. How will you make these decisions moving forward in terms of the division in which you enter?
Now I got this monkey off my back. I might play a couple more open events just because the fields have been so much bigger, but it'll just depend on how I feel physically. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the reason I don't play open anymore, I don't want to have to mentally deal with it. I've played so many open tournaments in my life, and it's so much more fun to play with people my own age.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you need to talk to Luke Humphreys. He's got something to say about that.
Oh, I know. Oh, if I could have been in that conversation, I would. I played in the skins in Asheville last year with Luke there, and we talked a little bit, but I didn't know he felt so strongly about people moving up and playing in age protected stuff. It's kind of funny, but I thought the same way when I was his age.
Exactly. Well, I mean, and he's not, I mean, honestly, he's not that young. He's in his mid 30s.
No, I want to say he's 36 or 37,
I think.
36. And so he's staring down, as you know, and as we all know, he's staring down the 40s. Not that he, you know, we'll see what he's thinking in 3 to 4 years when there's a whole nother crop of young kids, all these 15-year-olds who are now joining the tour, and his position is slowly dropping down. We'll see what he looks like then. But
and Luke really hasn't been playing that long, has he?
8, 9 years? Yeah, I was just gonna say about 10 years. He's what, an AM World champ from 2018?
He's still new.
Yeah.
He's done a lot for the game since he's been in it, but yeah, he's still new. So he can stay in the open as long as he wants. That's fine.
I'll support him. Yeah, we'll all support him. Everyone in the 40s will support him staying in open. That's going to be great.
Somebody had asked on the board if there was a time where I bested you.
Yes, there was. Kenosha.
And there is exactly once.
Parkside,
Per what I think I understand of Statmando, and this does check out, I think, if I do the math. Parkside, UW Parkside, a place where I picked up a win. And were you second or third or fourth?
I think I was third. I think McCree was second.
That sounds about right. Let me see if I can find it quickly. I only ask because, yeah, it won in 14, which is kind of crazy. I guess I don't know if I'm using Statmando fully in the most full sense. The fact that we would only played in 15 events at the same time.
Well, that was probably maybe Worlds, even though I haven't played on a lot of Worlds, but USDGCs, I don't know how many of you those have you played in.
Okay. I guess maybe that is right. I mean, you played in a ton of big events, and if I played in a big event, it wasn't necessarily A, I never played well at most big events, and B, I didn't, you would have probably beat me. So, checks out.
I mean, I've played, definitely played in a couple of the Madison events, and definitely something in Milwaukee. I've definitely played Dretzka in a tournament.
Yeah, and I may have run the tournament instead of playing, so that's possible too. But anyway, that was the one. I'm glad it's on your mind.
he rues it every time he tunes in.
He goes to bed at night just tossing and turning like, Miller got me. Yes, I beat McCree, Johnny, and then you and Pinhai Ken Cry tied. That was a super insanely windy day. I averaged 10, 12 golf. It was very windy. Yeah. It was a big deal for me, not so much for you. So awesome. Anyway, and funny enough, you and I and Johnny V all met and interacted for the first time. Presumably it would have been the 98 AM Worlds in Appleton, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
We didn't maybe necessarily know as much. You were touring, you were traveling around, and you played in, it was 99. You played in the 99 Fox Valley Open. You came back up the next year, right? Was that 99 maybe?
No. I did that in 2002 or 2003.
Okay. Yeah, because that one I did TD. That was out at Plamen. That's when we had Disc TV there.
Aaron Wild was still crushing it.
Yep, Barry and okay. So yeah, those some good times. Needless to say, it's been a long journey.
I remember pulling into Plamen for that event, and there was a couple girls out there, and they had Barry Schultz signs out there.
Really?
Wow. Yes, they did. Yes.
Damn.
Wow. Yeah, that's. Barry must have paid them.
Yeah, I was gonna say, did they come from Sheboygan or did they come from Point? Where did Schultzy get sign holders
at that age, at that time of year?
Wow. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's certainly impressive. So does a number like 500, is that the next obvious milestone? And is it realistically in your grasp?
Well, I mean, I didn't think 400 was this quickly realistic.
Okay.
It's been what, 2.5 years?
Uh-huh.
It was mid 2021, right before Worlds in Tennessee.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean,
that's, it's 500 ridiculous.
Easy.
100 more.
I mean, you keep this right, that means you only need to play roughly 200 events if you continue at this pace, and I think they're going to get easier, not harder. So if you're in age protected tournaments, they're going to get easier, not harder.
For a while. So 6 years? 6 years and give him 6 years?
No. It shouldn't take you that long.
I mean, if it stays on the clip that it's been for the past 3 or 4 years, yeah. I mean, it could totally happen in 3 years.
Yeah.
But I mean, it all depends on staying healthy and staying competitive. I mean, there are a bunch of tournaments with 50s, but I mean, I'm going to be staying in the 40s minimum.
Mm-hmm. So when you go play Worlds, if you
play, I'm playing in the 50s, I'm going to go to Emporia. I don't want to go to Emporia, but I'm going to go
and play an MP50.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Not MP45.
I'm going to stay in Kansas City and just commute back and forth. Yeah, I'm just going to stay in Kansas City and commute back and forth. It's only 90 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's only one
round a day. I mean, it's a piece of cake.
That's like one tournament a day for you. Well, who Are when you sign up in an MP50, especially we'll say at a Worlds or a Selinsky or any of the majors or whatever, who are you looking at as like, yeah, these are most likely going to be my closest competitors? Who are those people in your eyes right now?
Barry and Johnny. I mean, if Barry gets his game back to where he was before he broke his hand, mm-hmm. Barry and Johnny. Patrick Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Even though in the world cases, I mean, he's in 55, so I mean, I won't be playing against him.
Sure.
But yeah, Jay Redding.
Yep.
I mean, Smitty, I guess. I mean, Smitty's the defending champ, so I can really count him out. I mean, especially he's going to be in his backyard. He's from Wichita, so Emporia's an hour from there. So mm-hmm. The world's going to be in his backyard.
Are you clear of Joe Revere for a couple more years? How old is Joe?
He's early 40.
No, he's like, well, he's like 47 ish.
Really? I thought he was a year younger than us.
But no, I don't think so.
No, he's a little older. Okay.
I think he's 46, 47 ish. He might be even 48.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
But I mean, he just won it in 40, so I don't foresee him switching.
Yeah. Well, that's what
as long as his back stays healthy, he'll be fine.
Okay.
Because mm-hmm. he's definitely had back issues in the past.
Yeah. And we're still clear. You got a couple years before the Ricos or the Felbergs or the Avery Jenkins, not that Avery's playing a ton, but those guys all come to mind that are still, they're a little closer to me and Johnny. They're within mm-hmm. a few months of us. So they're still in the 46, yeah. 45, 46 range. Okay.
Still babies.
Still babies. What do you think? You just mentioned Patrick Brown and the 55 cut. They don't have a 45. There's not an MP45, but there's a 50, a 55, a 60, a 65, so on and so forth. It goes to that 5-year increment. How strongly do you feel about those cuts at those 5-year marks? Because those are relatively new, all things considered.
It's really hard to say because it's probably because you start getting to those ages and your body can definitely start breaking down in different ways. So I can't really say until I'm there and see how I feel then. Because I mean, when I was 36, 37 years old, like Luke Humphrey said, I'm not going to be playing MP40 for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, granted, I really didn't play a lot of MP40 for the first 3 or 4 years that I was in the 40s. I was still playing mostly open. If you look at the stats, I mean, I mean, it was majority of open still then. But yeah, you just start getting older, dude, and you just can't do it.
Well, and our field is getting deeper, you know, rather than a rarity in seeing like I'll go way back to like a River Sherrod coming in as a 16-year-old and you know, some, you know, Mattio as a 16 or Barsby as an 18-year-old or Doss as a 16-18-year-old. Like we had a few young superstars, but now we have dozens and dozens of them. When you go deep into the Gross and the Smiths and the Scotts and the, you know, the Joey Buckets, like these 16 to 23 year olds, now there's a couple dozen of them that are now taking those cash spots. And it got that much more competitive in the last few years. You know, not to say you can't win, but I think when I go back to Luke's conversation from last week, we have these anomalies. We have these standout anomalies and superstars that, you know, are like yourself and a McRae and a Schultz and a handful of these guys. But it's just that there's a handful and they have to be on the top of their game. And so that's why I can understand making that decision week in and week out as to is 40 or open is what's my best move.
Yeah, gotta let my dog out.
Yeah.
she's 16 years old. When she's got to go out, she's got to go out.
Yeah. No more waiting. there's no time to wait. Now's the time. Where will, you know, you just, I guess you just mentioned Worlds. I was going to say, where else might people run into you? Where else are we going to see you on a larger stage this year?
Oh, well, I'm definitely going to Whetstone again.
Okay.
See if I can defend it.
Okay. You're going to play MP40 there.
Yeah. I mean, I lost in a playoff 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. There was a 5-way playoff there last 2 years ago. And then to win it last year was pretty freaking cool. Let's see. I got a bunch of A tiers already lined up. I'm going to go to the Bud Hill Masters for the first time ever.
Okay.
That's the tournament I've heard about. It's been getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Last year was conflicting with the
Masters finishing.
McMorris finale in North Carolina, and also the A tier 20 minutes from my house that I wasn't going to miss. So, I mean, now they're all on separate weekends, and I think I'm already signed up for like 8 A tiers already. And I think there's going to be like 4 or 5 more that I'm signing up for. So it's going to be a busy year as far as bigger events for me, because there's so many A tiers. I think there was over like 110 A tiers this year.
Wow.
Okay.
That's insane. And I think the 7 of them were in North Carolina, and there was only like 2 or 3 in North Carolina last year.
So if anyone ever wonders, like, why are we there for the tour finale or what's the golf scene like, Schwebe's is putting that question to bed right there by saying just how rich they are in the disc golf in that area. Is there interest? Is there anything that could pull you into some international? And I think you don't like to some of that long-term travel, but or maybe you have other restrictions, but is there interest?
I will go to any country that speaks English as their primary language.
Okay.
So England, New Zealand, Australia, New Zealand.
You won't come to Thailand.
I put it this way. It's a respectful thing. I don't want people coming to my country and speaking their language. I don't want to go to somebody else's country and speak my language. So,
but English is basically a second language for almost the entire rest of the world now. But
I understand that. But it's just a matter of respect.
Okay, okay, that's an interesting perspective. But yeah, that definitely opens the door for a place like New Zealand, which we obviously saw that much more on the map. They have been, but this last year really drew in, and I know you're good friends with Corey.
He showed out there.
Yeah. I was just gonna say. So did any conversations ensue that convinced you that you need to get to New Zealand or any of the coverage?
That's a long flight.
It is. And
Corey got his trip paid for too. So that's a big bill.
It is. But I mean, you've got 400 wins, so. We should get there.
Well, if somebody wants to flip the bill, I will definitely consider it.
Okay. I like it.
But I will be caddying for Corey at Worlds this year. It's only 3.5 hours from my house.
Okay. Is it tough for you to, I know you're good friends with him specifically, but is it tough for you to not be competing than to watch others compete when, like, you're thinking, hey, I could maybe be winning like an A tier somewhere else this weekend?
Nope.
Really?
Not at all. No. I love to watch people play disc golf.
Okay.
Is there anything
to be able to watch them and help out if I can? That's it's huge for me. I love doing it.
Is there anything, we'll say, in the realm of realism that you haven't done that you want to do yet in the sport? I mean, I'm sure you'd love to win MPO Worlds, but rear view mirror, man. Like, is there anything that you haven't done yet that you would love to do in our sport?
HOF.
Mm. I think that's a given, man.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Like, you're old enough now.
It's the only thing I got left.
And that's just a matter of time. I mean, like, it's
yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. I was telling Mason Bellier. I was like, man, they say I'm getting in. I'm saying, when I'm in, then I'll believe that I'm in. But until then, I'm just going to keep doing what I do.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Yeah, I mean, that makes. I mean, like I said, 400 wins. I'm Yeah. One of the first earliest touring pros out on the scene. I don't see there being any issue
we should end the conversation. It's stupid. It's just a matter of if you look at all the players
that are in the hall right now already, historically, most of them are not in by their playing. They're in by a bunch of other accolades that they've done for the game.
Correct. Yeah. Most of them are founders, beginners. We're still in that kind of era where
Kenny was pretty much the first one that got in solely based on his ability to be amazing at disc golf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he won so many worlds. So.
Yeah. It's just a matter of that getting caught up. And then that's a whole nother discussion as to what Hall of Fame numbers really look like from a competitive standpoint, right? We have our non-competitive standpoint and your innovators and your ambassadors and volunteers and all of that stuff. Then we have a competitive standpoint, and that is going to be a very interesting conversation for the next 20 years.
Because if you think about it, I mean, take 200 wins. At this point, in 5 years, someone gets 200 local, regional, maybe a couple A-tier wins. Is that person a Hall of Famer if they never win now a pro tour, a national tour? I'm with you, Shwebe. I say no. And 200 is a phenomenal number, but at this point, I think, looking at it in the next 5 to 6 years, to get in on your play, you either have to have the numbers that Schwebe has or win on the pro tour. That's it. I think at this point, regional wins don't matter for Hall of Fame numbers. If we're talking, it's just, congratulations. If you get 200 Wisconsin tour wins, nobody cares other than you'll get in the Wisconsin Hall of Fame. Congratulations. We love you. You're not going to touch the disc golf.
I mean, if I'm really being honest, I'm just trying to take the doubt out of the question.
Yeah. No, I mean, there is none from most people's perspectives. And I think even if you look at the people that are in that will be voting for you, there's not going to be any question about it.
Okay. I guess my next question was kind of along those lines, so never mind. Do you have anything to, I don't want to say reflect, but any introspective on a teammate, an age-protected, eligible teammate in Owen Scoggins and what she did this last weekend? Does that hit you any differently than a 22-year-old or a 32-year-old winning and playing at that caliber in the FPO division? Does any of that hit you any differently?
Owen's doing it so right. I mean, she works so hard. I mean, and it's showing in that she's having an elbow problem now, but it proves that in the women's game, you don't have to throw far if you can put it in the basket every time you have to. If Evelina and Hannah could putt like she does, Kristen wouldn't have a chance.
Mm. Because you think they're driving and they're tee to green, so to speak.
The stats prove it. Mm-hmm. The stats prove I mean, they get the disc where it needs to be, and they just can't put it in the basket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we'd
if they could putt like Owen, it's game over.
Yeah, I think it would definitely, you'd see a very similar to what you'd see in the MPO competitively. You would see a top five women, like not just Kristen and then everybody else. You would see, it would be, oh, who's going to win this week? Is it going to be Kristen, Owen, Hannah, Evelina? Like that's what you would see. It would be much more parity if they could putt as well as Owen, or as be as consistent from the fairway as Kristen is. So, but both Evelina and Hannah get a little, spray off the tee pad when they throw far and they throw hard. It's not necessarily. And then on top of that, it's the putting, clearly. But Evelina's getting over that, honestly.
Evelina's putting's actually been really good this year.
It's really awesome to see
that she won.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there anything again, you've been around the game a long time. So is there anything that you see besides the hard work and the practice that Owen puts in? Is there anything that you take away from her putter, her putting style that you could share with the world when you see what she's doing to get it done? And I liken it to like a Yeti in a sense that obviously it has a significant amount of wobble, but it's online. Is there anything that you see and you're like, yeah, here's what people should take away from her putt?
She doesn't, once she's set up, she's putting, she's not thinking about it. She's just relying on her work process that she's already put in.
Okay.
I mean, it's just the repeatable thing that she does. And she's done it so many times. She just steps up and she just puts it every single time. And it's always, it's barely, if it's off, it's fractionally off. Mm-hmm. It's not a grip lock away, not hitting anything. That's why she can run it every single putt, no matter where it's at. She knows she's hitting metal.
Yeah. It's,
and if it rolls, it's just bad luck. We play with round
muscle
things
memory. And they roll. It's all muscle memory, and she putts so flat, and like you said, a little wobbly, but she's not throwing a hyzer like Henna or Evelina. Like Evelina has a hyzer putt in her, and we've seen other players that if you're off with your hyzer putt, you're missing the basket. Owen doesn't do that. Like, it's just so straight and flat and confident because of the hours and hours and hours a day she puts in on the putting green that you're right. She knows if she misses, what she's going to have, what, a 15-foot comeback at worst, you know?
And yeah, because she's hitting metal. She's hitting metal.
Exactly. And so she's going to, and she knows she's hitting that. It's a bunch of confidence.
Yeah. I think confidence builds on additional confidence in that sense too.
Yeah.
It's easy to get timid and shy when you're worried about having to make a comeback putt and then turn a birdie look into a bogey. So, yeah.
And one last time you saw her miss a comeback putt.
What's that?
When was the last time you saw her miss a comeback
putt? Very rarely. There was once this year, and I remember my jaw hit the ground. I was like, what? Is Owen broken? Like, because it's that rare. I mean,
it's kind of like the way Steve Rico was back in the day. He had that, like, stabbing little wobbly putt. Mm-hmm. And if he missed and he airmailed one every once in a while, he always banged the comebacker.
Yeah.
Every single time, because it was just that putting style for him. I mean,
yeah, and a little known fact that Owen played for and was sponsored by Legacy Discs when she initially came into the scene.
Her first sponsor.
I know plenty of people will never know that or have forgotten that.
I was just thinking that literally as I was watching her, and there was the big celebration, and you know, there's the commercial with her on Innova, and I was thinking back, like, bet you not many people remember like their first year or so on tour when she was a Legacy sponsored player.
Yep. Back in the is way back to like 2014 and Legacy coming into the scene late 2011 and so on, but was with Legacy and the Legacy guys are like, guys, don't F with her. Like, she will kick your ass in any putting game. Like, she'd come to the factory or she'd be hanging out at a tournament. Everyone's like, no, you don't want to go play a putting game against her, 'cause she's going to beat you. Some things never change.
Well, those were the old, I don't want to say rumors, but those were the old stories about her just sitting there on league nights and taking people's money at putting competitions just for fun. You know, like these guys would just walk up and think they can beat her and she'd walk away $5 richer or whatever it is.
Disc golf rich. Schwebby, any parting shots, anything you'd like to say before we let you go here tonight on this incredible milestone or beyond? It doesn't even have to be related to 400, but anything you'd like to say to everybody?
Thanks for everybody rooting me on, and thanks to the wife for supporting me for all these years, and wouldn't be possible without her. Gotta thank Innova Champion Disc. They've been my sponsor for 397 of my 400 wins. How can you go wrong? Casey Aviar always goes in the basket. Ken Climo proved that, and that's why I use them.
That's right. So everybody keep an eye out for the 400 disc.
Yeah. I'm excited to see it happen.
Me too. And Innova, get on that. Let's work with Schwebby. That's a milestone that we should be all celebrating.
Heck yeah, buddy. Absolutely. Well, thank you for catching up. Thank you for being in the chat. always providing a little additional insight online or offline, whatever the case might be. We appreciate it. We're glad to call your friend and know that we've got all these years. I was just thinking 20,
too many.
Almost 30, 25 plus. And seriously, it's been awesome. We love our little Schwebby tracker. You might go, you know, our tracker might go dormant for at least a few weeks. We don't need to worry about 402 or 404, but we're going to continue to watch it.
Awesome, man. Thanks for what all y'all do. It's awesome to watch.
Well, we appreciate it. Thank you again.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
One more time, congrats, and we'll talk to you soon, buddy. See ya.
All right, man.
Thanks, have a good
night. See ya. All right, Brian Schweberger.
Mr. 400, as of right now, that name will change.
Yeah.
Because like Mr. 402 doesn't have a good ring to it.
Same ring to it.
So
I'm going to put it into the live chat for anyone that is too lazy to do some Googling. Brian Schweberger, 12989 is his PDGA number.
He's got me beat. I didn't realize he's got me beat by 2,000.
Yeah, a couple thousand. I've got him by almost exactly a little over 2,000 myself.
Yeah.
I'm 10738. He's 12989. I put it in the chat. 800, and as of right now, timestamp this if you would like, 859 career events, 400 wins. And we didn't even get circle back to the whole VTI, but clearly really cool. It's unsanctioned, a Virginia team invitational in having different match play formats, and every match play event is a little bit different how they do it. But that one is through and through talked about as one of the most fun premier events. Mm-hmm. We often see players pull themselves off of the tour for a week or two sometimes to go partake. I think of a Zach Melton in the last few years specifically. I think of I got that word. Madison Walker, again, some of these players that have pulled themselves off of DGPT events and such just to go participate in that. So very cool to see. Forgot my next thought that I had was, I don't remember. Doesn't matter.
Don't matter.
Anyway, is there anything else you want to cover before we hike into an after show?
I don't think so. I think we kind of have everything covered right now, and we can give a quick chat in the after show, give something away. If you want to be eligible for a giveaway, remember that it's patreon.com/smashboxtv. You can help support us and all the fun things that we do every single week.
Yeah. Woo. With that, we're going to wrap it. 498. We're going to take a quick break, as Johnny was just alluding to. We'll take a very quick break and kind of reset the show. Then we'll come in with the after show. If you're unfamiliar with the after show, somehow, if you're new here, is our time to talk about things disc golf or non-disc golf related. We also interact with everyone that comes in off the chat board. So maybe you have something else you want to come at us with, and we can give other updates, perspective, things of that nature that, like I said, may or may not be disc golf related. So we're looking forward to seeing you there, and we'll also have a giveaway in there as well for our Patreon subscribers. For Johnny V, I'm Terry Miller, the disc golf guy. Neither of us are anywhere near Mr. Schwebby in terms of wins, but congratulations to our special guest, Brian Schweberger, in his 400th win, and congrats to our Open at Austin champions from this weekend, Nicholas Antala, along with Owen Scoggins. We'll take a quick break, and we'll see you in the after show when you step inside the Smashbox.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/smashboxtv.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.